On today's episode of Locked Up with History, we visit the Geelong Jail and look back over its history. How long has it been there? What are the conditions like? And what was it used for besides a prison? Stay tuned.
Warning. This podcast contains discussions of some potentially distressing topics. Listeners, please be advised. Come with us for true and tall tales unsurpassed, with stories from Victoria's dark colonial past. Spirits, executions, ghosts, murders and ghouls. These are the stories they don't teach you at school. All these twisted tales of mystique and mystery coming to you now on Locked Up With History.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Locked Up with History, Episode 2. My name is Deb Robinson, and on today's episode, we are going to be talking about the three-story bluestone behemoth, the Geelong Jail. Today, it is over 170 years old, and boy, did they make buildings to last in those days. It operated for 138 years, reportedly the longest continuously running colonial prison here in Victoria. Now, it's been known as the Seaside Resort, the Temperance Hotel, the old Geelong Jail over the years, but it's also my second home and that of the Twisted History crew. The many stories that are contained in every fabric of this building are still being uncovered. But first, let's go back to the very beginning, when Geelong was in its infancy. Geelong was named by Governor Richard Bourke in 1837 and surveyed in 1838, just 3 weeks after the naming of Melbourne. It was named for the local Indigenous Wathaurong people's word for land or cliffs, Geelong. Please excuse my pronunciation, it is not one of my strong suits. In 1840, the post office would open in Geelong, the second in the Port Phillip district. And the first wool store was built in the same period, and Geelong would boom as a major wool port, with wool stores opening along the waterfront. Now, wool would remain an important part of Geelong's history in the very early days. Immigrants would arrive at Point Henry, making Geelong one of the many people's first experiences of their new homeland. Many hopefuls seeking their fortunes in gold would disembark here at Geelong before heading off to the goldfields. And with the increased population, of course, came increasing crime rates and the need for places of incarceration. The first jail built would become later known as the South Geelong Jail, but initially was also known as Her Majesty's Jail Geelong. In October 1839, the first allotment of funding was provided by the New South Wales colonial government, totalling £750. The first watch house was located about 500 metres from the Barwon River on the southwest corner of Ballyang and Yarra Streets. The original building consisted of four slab huts, originally with one being used as a watch house, one as a courthouse, and two as police offices. It was replaced by a more permanent structure between 1841 and 42, constructed from the local freestone that had been quarried upstream in the Barwon River. It underwent a couple of renovations, one in 1841 when solitary cells and the keeper rooms were added, and again in 1850 when facilities were upgraded while the new jail was being built. Stone walls eventually enclosed the complex, which now included a kitchen and a jailer's room, along with a privy and a night sewer pit. Very important parts, I'm sure you agree. Once the new jail in Myer Street opened, South Geelong Jail was used as a female jail, although many women ended up in the new jail as well. The stocks were removed from the front of the courthouse here in 1854, reportedly the last remaining stocks in Victoria at the time. Now, the South Geelong Jail was sadly demolished in 1906 after being deemed unfit for habitation. Those in charge of the demolition said it was the oldest building of its kind in the state at the time. The foundation stone bearing the date of 1841 was given to the trustees of Cadinia Park by request. However, I'm still trying to trace where it may be today. If you have any ideas, I would love to hear from you.
Do you like chocolate? Do you like to be scared? Then this event at the Geelong Jail is perfect for you. Our adult Easter egg hunt is back this Easter Sunday, April the 4th at 8:30 p.m. with plenty of eggs and plenty of scares. Book now and dare to be scared. Kids Easter egg hunt at 6:30.
Now, the new Geelong Jail was first funded in 1848 by the New South Wales colonial government. After a sort, the old jail was no longer adequate. The new jail was built in stages, with the West Wing being completed in 1853 when the first intake of 12 prisoners arrived. The East and North Wings were completed by 1861, with the remainder finished by 1864. But the walls were not finished until the 1880s, which might account for the number of escapes that occurred from the building. Initially, the West Wing was built consisting of two levels. Now, the jail was built out of bluestone that was quarried at Williamstown by the convicts kept on the hulks. The hulks Sacramento and the Success both spent time here in Cryo Bay, whilst the prisoners were building the jail that some of them in the future would be incarcerated in. In an article in 1851, as the first floor of the West Wing neared completion, it was described in the local papers as
looking grim enough to frighten crime. Thick walls, deep sunk solid basements, and iron-barred windows.
In April 1853, the Lieutenant Governor, Charles Latrobe, was to officially proclaim the jail as a place of detention on his return to Melbourne after he had inspected the premises. However, when more than 10 days had passed, the sheriff took matters into his own hands after reports from the colonial surgeon that he would not be held responsible for the health or the lives of the prisoners if they were not immediately removed. A dozen of the weakest men and three women were moved to the new jail. At this time, the jail consisted of only 38 cells, 8 feet by 6 feet. Due to the limitation of having single convicts in the cells, the paper lamented that only 33 prisoners were accommodated and moved that the additional wings needed to be built immediately. By 1859, the West Wing was completed to the first floor. Foundations of the East Wing, North Wing, Governor's Quarters, Chapel were laid, but not complete. Wooden buildings had been erected, housing temporary quarters for the jailer and other staff, the stores and the kitchen. The high palisading fencing was in the process of enclosing the exercise yards and the jail as a whole. Hard labour was undertaken in one of the exercise yards, where prisoners were put to work with stone breaking, or cracking diamonds as it was colloquially known. To this end, there was a pile of bluestone in the centre of the yard where prisoners put the broken rock down the chute in the fence for the corporation to pick up and use on the roads. Even today, there are still some chutes visible in the brick walls of the jail. There was a shed in the yard where the prisoners were called to dinner, which consisted of meat, soup, bread and potatoes. A yard behind the courthouse had been laid out with plants and shrubs and would be used to grow vegetables for the jail. By 1861, the jail looked mostly complete, with a few key features still missing. There were a number of temporary rooms at the rear of the building, including the prisoner's kitchen, the guards' room, but the cell block itself was complete. They were described by a newspaper man as being all stonework, iron railings, hard wooden floors and whitewash. Cells were closed with heavy doors with large locks and even larger bolts, with peepholes for the warders and turnkeys. Each cell had a bedboard on which the prisoner lay with two blankets. Now, if you've ever been to the jail today in the dead of winter, you know how bitterly cold it can be. Yet they only had two blankets. There would be one or three prisoners in each cell, never two. Various rooms were set apart for the management of the jail, with rooms for turnkeys, chaplains, magistrates, a searching room, a reception room and a visiting room, all on the ground floor of the north wing. On the second floor was the chapel and the hospital, along with separate entrances for the lady offenders. By 1867, the jail was finished, with visitors entering through the imposing front gates before entering the now complete three-storey prison, after speaking to a warder, of course. The south wing had been finished and housed the kitchen, where the meals were prepared, in four large boilers and large ovens for baking bread. There's also a wash house with a large fireplace and a boiler. A pump would move the hot water upstairs to the hospital. The hospital had 8 beds over 2 rooms, along with a surgery and bathroom. There was an isolation room for those requiring more quiet or for the lunatics that were sometimes kept there. Now, the term lunatic, whilst now being politically incorrect, was the term that was used in this time period, and it simply meant of the moon. The chapel was decked out very similar to the model prison at Port Arthur, with individual compartments where prisoners were kept next to each other but are unable to see their neighbour. Part of the silence and separation system, commonplace in the Pentonville system of our early prison history. Once the row was full, a warder ran a bolt along behind the prisoners to secure the doors during service. The chaplain was in a pulpit high on the wall with an armed warder ensuring attention was paid to the minister's words. The jail remains much the same in construction apart from the addition in the 1870s of the two-storey governor's residence and in the early 1900s with the chief warder's quarters. In the 1960s, a laundry and boiler room were added in one of the exercise yards, which has just been recently demolished, and schoolrooms in the southwest yard, which have also recently been removed.
For a fascinating look at life in a colonial prison, visit Geelong Jail Museum. Situated just over an hour from Melbourne in the heart of Geelong, it's Victoria's most intact and longest continually operating colonial prison. For information, search for Geelong Jail or call 1300 865 800.
Well, now that we have a very detailed description of what the Geelong Jail looked like, let's talk about what the building was used for. There are some roles that many of you may not realise. The most obvious role, of course, is that of a maximum security prison for both men and women. South Geelong Jail continued to be used for female prisoners until the late 1860s, and then everybody was incarcerated in the Myers Street building. Female prisoners would be held here until about 1900, when all female prisoners would be sent to Coburg and the new female penitentiary, part of Pentridge. There was still the odd female that was held here at Geelong, but mostly only whilst on remand, and it dictated the employment of a female matron to take care of her within the now male prison. The introduction in 1864 of the Neglected and Criminal Children's Act allowed for the government to assume responsibility for children in certain circumstances. In 1868, it was decided by the powers that be that as the jail was standing mostly empty and that the Ryrie Street Industrial School was overflowing, that it made sense to turn the north, south and east wings into the Myers Street Industrial School. Male and female prisoners remained in the West Wing, with the only entry being through the gates from the Supreme Court next door. It was believed that the jail could house up to 250 children with modifications to the cells. These modifications including doors being removed from the cells in the East Wing and the corridors that were fitted up as dormitories. Higher rails were added to prevent accidents as small children falling over, and the chapel was converted to a schoolroom, and a dividing wall extended across the circle, leaving one third for the jail side and the remainder for the school. A party wall was also built in the west wing, which you can still see the entrance from today between, I think it's cells 15 and 16, to ensure the men did not mix with the bells of the prison. By November 1869, there were 150 children, girls aged between 3 and 16 years and boys under 6 years, all sent from either Melbourne or Sunbury. By 1872, there were 195 children. The children were expected to learn how to cook, do laundry, make beds, along with schoolwork, and with all of their clothing being made on site under the supervision of a few local ladies. However, a Royal Commission in 1871 deemed the jail an unsuitable place for young children, along with a public outcry over the housing of
innocent children in a building meant for the criminal element of our society.
The Myers Street Industrial School officially closed in December 1873, and Governor Dwyer put to good use the wood from the dividing wall as the building returned to being solely a jail, building tables and stools for the cells. In 1877, the jail became the hospital jail for the colony of Victoria. And what that meant was that any prisoner in any jail who was ill, dying, disabled, old, or suffering from a condition that required specialist medical care was sent here to Geelong. It was believed that being so near the sea, it would have recuperative powers on the prisoners. It was then it became known as the Seaside Resort and the Prison of the Ill, named such by the prisoners themselves. Unfortunately, it meant that the jail also had a very high death rate, with over 250 inquests being held up until the 1920s. Now, it would remain in the role of a hospital jail until the 1920s, when it was set aside as a reformatory prison. It was then that the hospital was moved to the third floor, allowing the previous hospital area to be used to teach prisoners skills in the hopes they would become constructive members of society and would not reoffend. During World War II, the jail would become a military detention barracks, with all prisoners removed when handed over to the military in February 1942. It was known as the 8th Australian Detention Barrack after formerly being known as Southern Command Military Prison Geelong, but would eventually become known as the Geelong Detention Barracks. Now, it held prisoners, or SUS, soldiers under sentence, from all branches of the military and even some from overseas. Now, whilst it was thought that military prisoners might be a little bit easier to handle, in July 1945, 22 prisoners staged the largest breakout in Victorian prison history. It was a very well-planned escape, with all communications from the towers to the main jail cut, and 18 of them were still at large a week later. The final entry in the unit diary was in July 1946, with still 65 SUS being held. In 1947, the Geelong Jail was re-proclaimed as a jail and in 1958 became Geelong Training Prison, where trades such as printing, sign writing, painting, tailoring and brickmaking were taught. In 1960, there were 119 inmates. Now, the Geelong Jail finally closed its doors in July 1991, after 138 years of operational history. The building had long served its purpose and many of the prisoners and staff were transferred to the new Bowen Prison at Lara. Now, since closing, the building has continued to be used as a filming location for a variety of TV shows and movies. The Rotary Club Geelong approached the council in 1995 with the idea of opening the jail as a museum, which they ran up until 2019. Today, the jail has been sold into private hands, and we have been lucky enough to be given the chance to continue the museum and, of course, our nightly tours in this fabulous old building. And hopefully we'll be allowed to do so for many years to come.
You're listening to Locked Up with History.
Now, as with any old prison, there's always the darker side of its history. The punishments, the hard labour, solitary, and the last and awful sentence of law carried into effect, executions. Now, Geelong was the scene of six executions. The first two were a double execution held at Gallows Flats on the 9th of November 1854. Now, Gallows Flats is an area just outside the jail, about 200 metres from the front gate, and it was the first and only public execution here in Geelong. John Gunn and George Roberts would lose their lives for murder and attempted murder. James Ross was executed for the murder of his neighbour's wife and his own infant son and the very near death of his long-suffering wife, Mary. He was put to death on the 22nd of April 1856 and the first regional execution after the passing of the Private Executions Bill. Owen McQueenie was hanged for the Green Tent murder of Elizabeth Lowood Meredith on the 28th of October 1856. James Murphy was executed for the brutal murder of Constable Daniel O'Boyle on the 6th of November 1863. And finally, Thomas Menard was hanged for the murder of a workmate on the 20th of October 1865. Now, all of these execution stories will be explored in a lot more detail in future episodes of Locked Up with History. But of course, these were not the only punishments inside the walls of the jail. The most common in the early days was, of course, hard labour. Prisoners were put to work for hours each day with a hammer and a bucket, reducing bluestone blocks to small pieces to be used on the roads of Geelong. The more elderly prisoners, or if the weather was bad, were put to work in the chapel picking oakum all day. Now, this involved using a tool to pick apart the old ropes off the ships. It was very dirty and very boring work. The ropes, once pulled apart, would be used as caulking in the hulks of future ships. Women prisoners were employed with washing and laundry, some from inside the jail and some from outside of the jail, for which payment would be made. One of the key contracts was the uniforms of the military at Fort Queenscliff. And then there was also the secondary punishments. In the early days, the flogging triangle took pride of place in one of the exercise yards as a motivator to obey the rules. If you were to be flogged, the government hangman would tie you to the triangle, sometimes known as the Three Sisters, where a leather belt would protect your kidneys, and you would then receive the appropriate number of strokes of the cat of nine tails. Now, it wouldn't take long for the skin to burst open, and many old convicts bore the scars of their misdemeanours until the day they died. But perhaps the most common form of secondary punishment was that of solitary confinement, sometimes referred to as the dark cells. You could receive up to 30 days in these cells with no contact with the rest of the prison. It was enough to drive some prisoners out of their minds. And it didn't take a lot to get a stint in here. Quarrelling with another prisoner would cost you 2 days. Having articles that you shouldn't, another couple of days. Disobedience of orders could see you in solitary for up to a week. And of course, you also had the dreaded bread and water that could also be ordered. In later years, the same type of offences would see loss of privileges, such as not being able to use the canteen. My, how times changed.
Interested in learning more about this episode? Join the Locked Up With History Facebook group for more facts and discussions about the dark colonial past of Victoria and beyond.
Now, there have been thousands of men, women and children who have passed through the gates of Geelong Jail between 1853 and 1991. Some were here for a long time, others only a short time, and some never left the jail walls while still alive. But no matter if they were prisoners, warders, turnkeys, governors or families of these people, they have definitely left their stamp on this building. And we are still uncovering stories with every new piece of research or contact with descendants of ex-prisoners and ex-staff. Sometimes we're lucky enough to receive objects at the museum and have been privileged enough to hear the stories of those individuals and their connections to the Geelong Jail or other jails here in Victoria. Now, if you have a story connected to any of the jails in Victoria, we would love to hear from you. We're currently undertaking a project where we are recording oral histories of some of these people before the stories are lost for good. In future episodes, we'll be having a look at some of the prisoner stories from Geelong. And there have been many fascinating stories, such as Percy Ramage, Angus Murray, Clark and Farrell, Chopper Reed, Edwin Eastwood, Alice Smith, Cecilia Curtin, Marianne Silk, Frederick Parkinson, to name but a few. And also some of the staff, some who spent the majority of their adult lives looking after the prisoners, such as Charles Barnes, James Curley, Dr. Macon. Many of these men spent up to 40 years serving in the penal service. But many more have never had their stories told, and we hope to tell some of their stories in future episodes. We hope you'll find them as fascinating as we do. You never quite know where a story is going to lead.
If you'd like to visit some of the places featured on Locked Up With History, book in a tour with Twisted History. For the full range of tours and to book, visit twistedhistory.net.au.
Now, before we sign off on this old girl that is the Geelong Jail, I want to remind you to join us over on Facebook and the Locked Up With History group. Now, this is where you can ask me any of the questions you might have on the current episodes and where I can pop up some photos to illustrate what we've been talking about on the podcast. I hope to see you over there. Our next episode, we'll be exploring the 1865 escape from the Geelong Jail of William Thompson and Thomas Reynolds, one of them who was quite a cheeky character, shall we say. But until then, see you on the darker side of history.
Information on the story from today's episode, check out the show notes or join the Locked Up With History Facebook group. Remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.